to Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. We are brought to you by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. If you'd like to check us out, you can find us on the web at renegadeconcepts.com. And, of course, you can always listen to our shows live or in replay at renegaderadio.businessradiox.com. So today we're going to reach out and have a little conversation that's going to benefit all of you guys who are embracing the mobile world. Actually, we've got a return guest today, Mr. Dan Homrick, originally with SmartSoft Mobile Solutions. But Dan, I understand there's been some merger acquisition activity that has taken place, and we're moving into whole new bounds of mobile technology here. So tell me what's going on with you today.
Yeah, well, hey, Andy, it's great to see you again. Glad to be back. Glad to have the opportunity to share some knowledge. In our growth plans for our company and the expansion of what's going on in mobility, the pace that it's moving, in order to continue to accelerate and serve our customers the best we could, we needed to find someone, a strategic partner who actually ended up becoming new employers as well. So it's really worked out well. Mobiquity is a company that is based out of the Northeast, has had a phenomenal track record, solid financial backing, and has really provided a great deal of innovation in the mobile space. So they complement the efforts that we've achieved and the successes that we've achieved, and we're really excited about being a part of that.
Well, you guys bring a couple keys to them as well, right? I mean, one, they had no presence here in the Southeast.
Correct.
And you really anchored that leg. And then there's some other things that you bring out, like the SAP development, et cetera?
Yeah, exactly right. So they have strong thought leadership in the SAP space and had been doing some work. But we've got quite a successful track record in the SAP space. We've done a number of implementations there and have helped both customers and SAP realize some of their mobile initiatives. And then absolutely right, in the Southeast, Atlanta's not only home to several Fortune companies as headquarters here or regional offices, but it's also the home of mobile payments. And in fact, being part of the Technology Association of Georgia, you know, there's a real initiative to help put Atlanta, Georgia on the map as being a real mobile headquarters in the United States, if not the world, because of all the capability, talent, and the companies that are here.
Well, Dan, you know, on our show, we're all about renegades and this breaking the rules of conventional thinking and defying these conventional norms. And obviously, businesses have been down the road of conventional norms with some of their processes, especially in technology, for a number of years. Mobile is really starting to open some doors, though, and you've got to be thinking in a lateral fashion here, getting outside of some of those norms that have been established. However, there's obviously some precautions that you want to take. There's some things to be aware of. Maybe let's talk about some of the myths that exist in mobile technology right now, especially in this app space, and then some of the must-haves. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm kind of equating it to a few years ago when you had to get a web page, right? Everybody said, you got to have one. And yeah. And now it's not a matter of having a web page. It's kind of what's on it, how do you get there, et cetera. But let's delve into the mobile side and tell me what's real and what's not real.
That's great. It's interesting. We're discussing a current theme that we at Mobiquity have identified, and the message is, you know, stop committing random acts of mobility, right? You know, so it's a play on a popular bumper sticker, but it's highly accurate because, to your point, if we take a look back in the days of the internet and everyone who embraced it early and the achievements they made, compared to organizations that said, "Yeah, we need to have a catalog up there or a contact us page or something like that," and then with the advent of companies such as Amazon, who really dominated a presence, and other companies were very much in the defensive, and no longer could it just be a website developed by somebody in the basement, right? It needed to be much more sophisticated. It became a very large part of the company strategy and e-commerce and messaging and worldwide presence. So we're at the exact same inflection point with mobile. And it's not about just having a mobile app. It's about having the right mobile apps. And the investment spent on any number of apps versus the investment and return spent on the right apps is dramatically different.
Well, let's talk about the spending on apps. I mean, what type of money are we looking at in 2012 or 2013, I mean, what's a typical business going to be spending in the mobile app space?
So let's say at the low end, and by low end, I mean just some sort of application that you want developed. We've typically not done an application less than $50,000, and that's usually very targeted for a very specific function. Now, we've helped companies ease into mobility for less than that, but most of the organizations that we're dealing with are spending somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000 or $150,000 for that first app that needs to be completed. And then it expands all the way up to a multi-million-dollar investment, just as their e-commerce or their traditional intranet, right, or web-based investments. So, you know, those numbers can scare people away if they're not aware of the benefits and the return on investment. But it's a very broad range. So we help large retailers who spend millions with us, and we help smaller companies hit a very tactical solution who may spend tens of thousands with us.
Yeah, I mean, some of the larger companies, if I understand right, are spending almost $1.5 million each in 2012 on the mobile app space.
Yeah, it's been very interesting in what's transpired with the right application in mobility. So I don't know the corollary to the e-commerce, right? So creation of the website, but getting back to your point, Andy, about the first websites that came up were glorified brochures, right? And people realized they could actually conduct business, and the more they invested in that, the more the return they got. What we understand is happening in mobility, what we've heard from some of our customers, is that if the investment matches a traditional brick-and-mortar investment, their return matches their brick-and-mortar investment. So that's certainly on the retail side, but it gives you a measure of the value and the power of the right mobile solution.
What do you see companies spending more money on? Do you see them investing more money in, I would think, outward-facing apps that engage the customer, or inward-facing apps that engage their employees or the tactical team?
That's a great question, and that bifurcation there doesn't really need to exist, but it is how everybody views the world, and it's easy to segment it because one of those is typically handled by a marketing organization. One budget's controlled by marketing or messaging, and the other is controlled by IT. And so it's easy to separate those. I'll talk about the convergence of those for a minute, and then I'll get back to your specific question. When we talk with our customers, we say, you know, this is, you know, avoid the event app and think about the 15-year strategy. Now, that's pretty difficult to do in mobility, right, because it's moving so fast. But we do know that information that's in your systems, whatever they are in your back office, let's call them a back office system, maybe they're in the cloud, but that information is information that can be used by a number of different stakeholders in your ecosystem. So it could be used by employees or associates or colleagues or customers or partners to help all of them do their job better. So when you're laying out an architecture and a plan for mobility, it's best to think of all of those needs at a very high level and then make sure you're mapping out an architecture that allows you to serve both of those for 15 years. Now, back to the question, most customers make that division, and they'll say, okay, I've got an outward brand that I need to engage my customer for some reason. Maybe it's helping them create a menu on a device so in a restaurant chain they can order food, right? Well, that's clearly an outward-facing solution and an absolute mandatory component for business today. You look at the number of people that are using mobile apps, how they're using mobile apps, how mobile apps are influencing shopping. Last year, all shopping purchases, 5% were influenced or used a mobile app. So you think about that means you have to have a presence, you have to have capability. It's also sort of a baseline expectation from consumers now. So building that brand, having that brand, facilitating customer use is something that Mobiquity is absolutely key competency in that area. Very innovative in engaging user experience, led by that in particular, which is important because everybody has an expectation when they use a mobile app, right? I want it to be fun. I want it to be great. You know, in fact, on the way over here, I was trying to figure out how to integrate my car in my mobile app together, right? Because I know that's coming. If it's not, I mean, in fact, in some places it's already here. And I want my car experience to be like my mobile app experience. So the expectation is there, and that, and we deliver that. The second component that I think is really interesting for business owners is, and what we saw more of the business process, the internal, as you defined it, is really where there's tremendous low-hanging fruit for organizations. When you think about the fact that if I can give someone easy access to sales information, customer information, inventory information, provide a capability or functionality on a BYOD, bring your own device kind of capability, and really free up my associates, my employees, and my vendors, that offers tremendous opportunity and is a great big bang for the buck.
Well, that's a great place to put this topic in and see what your thoughts are here, because user experience is a huge piece of the pie here. Mm-hmm. And not only from the consumer side, because obviously if it's not engaging there, I think the statistic is more than half, something like 60% of applications are deleted after the first use, mm-hmm. Because they don't engage the end user. But I'm thinking on the internal business side too. I mean, and this was true not just with mobile apps. It's true for things like CRM, which, you know, we've all heard the rage.
Yep, yep.
A lot of salespeople hate these things because of the user experience. They're difficult. They're clunky. Mm-hmm. It's more work for less production. So, how does a company really look at the user experience and make sure that when they invest in one of these apps, they're going to get good return for the investment?
Well, clearly having a track record of delivering in that space is important. And then it's also a clear understanding when you're talking with a company or, let's say, a potential vendor, how they lay that thought process out. So, for example, understanding how that business user uses the application. So I love to use the classic example of a purchase order approval, because almost everybody uses PO approvals, right, in their business process. And almost everybody hates to have to do it, right, because it means being tied down to a desk or launching a browser, things of that nature. So very simple elements that you may not realize at first, but a mature, sophisticated user experience team will come up with is completing that process in maybe two or three touches of a screen. I'll give you an example of that. A single sign-on, single login into my back office, right? So that's a must. I don't want to have to log in multiple times. Log in once, present information that's only pertinent to me in priority order for me to pay attention to. So I get a list immediately after I log in, for example, of POs. And I can then select if we look at an iPhone device or an Android device, touch an item in a list. And then at that point, it gets displayed, press the approve button, and I'm done. Now, I'm doing all that because I'm right-handed. I'm over here moving my thumb on my right hand because I'm walking down an airport, right, causeway. I'm looking at this. I know this needs to be approved. I've got my login. I want to get these three POs approved before I have to board my plane. That's not a really elaborate example necessarily, but it represents thinking like the user of the app, putting yourself in their context, their position, then designing an app around that.
Okay, so, let me jump on that because this may be a loaded question, but I've been in technology myself, and I know one thing that happens oftentimes in companies. Engineers design this stuff. Mm-hmm. Engineers don't use it, right? The way you write something and the way an engineer thinks about something is often different than the way an end user uses the product.
Right.
How does Mobiquity deal with that? Do they actually have some guys who are end users that are brought into this process?
Yeah. We've got literally the thought leaders in the industry working for the company. So we have a great team. And led by Andrew Heiser, and he's absolutely tremendous at this, and he's built out an organization that when we start an engagement, we'll start there. And different needs, right, may dictate a different path, but most typically our engagements start with a very thorough understanding of the user experience, walking through, understanding, sitting with them, sitting with the customer, sitting with the end users. And it involves a whole lot more than that, but absolutely, Annie, that is an absolutely critical part and a key differentiator for us. So So we have not only the strategic element led by Dr. Scott Snyder, but Andrew's group also driving that from the user experience. And then we have another part of the organization that focuses on the architecture. So while they're all brought together, they also have some standalone independence in terms of making sure that one isn't compromised by the other and that the user experience really comes first and foremost and therefore drives the user adoption, which is really what you want.
Now, how do you manage the customer in all of this, right?
Yeah.
Customers often don't know what they want, right? Or they know what, I should rephrase that. They know what they think they want, but what they think they want isn't what they really need.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to be careful here because you can do a lot of brand damage with a bad app.
Absolutely. It's very disturbing how quickly people will forget their loyalty by a bad experience with an app. I was told the story of by a gentleman who said that he was shopping for housewares. He was using the app. The app crashed just once, but he abandoned the app, deleted it, went to, in this case, the iTunes store, downloaded a competitive app, and started using that and did his shopping from there. So he made an instantaneous decision to abandon one brand and go to the other. So all the way to quality of the app, but building back from there. So most companies, I shouldn't say most, but a lot of companies don't know how to do that, and that concept is a little bit foreign, particularly coming out of the IT organization. So we see organizations reaching out to they're hiring directors of mobility or VPs of mobility, or they're bringing the organizations of the IT and the e-commerce side together, typically because the dot-com owners have a bit more savviness, if you will, about the user experience, right? They've sort of been part of that, their mainstay. But we help educate the customers on all of those fronts, the architecture, the UX, the strategy, the development process, in order to help them achieve their objectives.
Well, let's talk about app strategy. So, you know, I'm a store, I'm a retailer, I'm a restaurant, I'm whatever, and I decide that I'm going to create this app. So now I have this great app, I've invested in it, and I hope it's going to engage my users. How do I get it into their hands? How do I get them to know about it?
Yeah, that's an hour long conversation, best had by someone smarter than me in that space. But I'll take a stab at it. You know, we work on two different ways. One is leverage the existing channels that you already have. So the best place to advertise your app is either your web presence or in store, right? Depending upon what your venue is. In the case of some of the retailers we've helped, it's a QR code that someone can scan that will then take them to, you know, the ability to download the app. Internally, there are app stores for enterprises, and it's a very different process for that. And Apple does it differently than RIM, and RIM does it differently than Windows, and Windows does it differently than Android or Google does. So knowing the nuances of all of those. Certainly using links to, if you're Facebook, you know, if you have a presence there, and tweeting and things like that is also very valuable.
Yeah, because that just seems like a real place that companies miss the opportunity. You know, you go into a store, you go into a restaurant, and that interactive side doesn't seem to exist. You either know coming in mm-hmm. that they have it, or you don't. And if you don't, there's nothing oftentimes engaging. I mean, I'm amazed how that happens.
Yeah, and so am I. I mean, when I go into my favorite restaurants, the first thing I want to know is why they don't have an app, and if they do have an app, why are they not advertising that application? You know, that's the beauty of this, the intimacy of this device. And sometimes people have a hard time understanding what we mean by that, but this is, you know, in my case, I carry the iPhone. It's my iPhone. I've got pictures of my family on there, and I've got my business apps on there, and I've got my GPS. I got a whole bunch of stuff on there. I also have one or two apps of my favorite retailers where I shop, and I expect all of my transactions to be done through that app, and I want all of my transactions. In fact, I'll tell them all sorts of information about myself if they only ask, because I want a really strong relationship with them so I don't have to deal with anybody else. And restaurants, great thing to pick up on there, Andy, is restaurants in particular, between couponing specials, knowing what my preferences are, knowing when I'm in proximity, welcoming me when I'm walking in the door by name, all of those are capabilities that can be driven by apps today.
Well, that's a great point that you bring up, and a topic that is definitely spinning the circles in the higher corporate levels. I know the CMO for Motorola Mobile Solutions spoke on this not long ago, talking about that engagement factor of mm-hmm. really working with companies so that when you show up at a restaurant or a retail location, you know, your smartphone recognizes that you're there. It recognizes who you are, recognizes what you ordered or what you bought the last time you were in, maybe make some recommendations or offer some specials based on those preferences. Yeah. I mean, it's a really different way of engaging your audience.
It is. So it's that one of the terms has been used to describe that is location-based services. And it's been a lot of times there is apps such as Around Me, which is a great first app out there. I said, wow, this is really great. Well, now I want it to be a lot tighter than that, right? And to give an example of sharing information, how it used to be versus how we do it today, I like to ask the question, particularly for people in the audience who are my generation, which is, did you ever have a onion skin resume or resume printed out on some really high quality paper at some point in your career, and you said confidential and do not distribute, and you know, don't disperse this information, and you guarded that resume with a great deal of value. And now what do you do on LinkedIn? I mean, or Facebook, right? I mean, all of your information is there, and people are commenting on your professional career real time. So it's that broad jump from me controlling information, really limiting it to exposing it to anybody out there, more or less, that I want to. It's a huge paradigm shift. And businesses need to do the same thing, and I as a customer will do the same thing, right? So when I walk into one of my favorite restaurants, I want them to know everything about me, and if I'm vegetarian, I want to be offered a vegetarian special, not the pork chops.
Right. So thinking about apps and thinking about the way we interact with them, and you know, you were talking about doing the purchase orders, you walk down mm-hmm. you know, to get on the plane at the airport. The reality is, if we all did this walking or sitting somewhere, that would be nice. But the reality is, most people are browsing for stuff in the car, yep. on the move, on the go. Are there developments in the technology that are making it easier and more friendly for people to interact with applications via a voice command mm-hmm. versus I got to press and click and look and read?
Yeah, absolutely there are. We've you know, I worked in the medical industry for a while in voice transcription, and it was a very, very complicated business and very, very expensive. And it's amazing now that I can talk to Siri on my phone and a lot of the time get a good answer, right? Not all the time yet. That's probably a user error. But absolutely, and this gets back to your question about the user experience. So incorporating the optical elements, incorporating the audio elements into the solution is a very important part as well, because you want to be able to interact, as you said, by voice, leverage that voice, and do it in a way where they're short, sufficient, sweet answers, right? Because that's going to be the best. So, yes, we're getting better and better. And to your point, that's the integration with the car, right? So, can I have the PO number an amount read to me in my car, so you know my hand's free, and I then respond approve, and the application's approved. We'll see more and more of that come out, particularly with some of the new devices that are coming out in the next 6 to 9 months.
Okay, so let's dial this idea back into the wheelhouse of where a lot of our listeners are as far as business size. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm a major corporation, if I'm a Target, for example, in the retail side, or you know, I'm a McDonald's, you know, restaurant chain type thing. I get it, because obviously I've got a large consumer base. I want to reach them, and I've got the money to put towards that app. Mm-hmm. But you know, even on the low end, as we were talking about earlier, at $50,000, you're really tapping a budget that isn't existing mm-hmm. yet in some of these companies that right. maybe could and or should be taking advantage of this technology. So, what should we'll call it a small business, even though that's such an undefined space yeah. in America right now, yeah. because it could be anything. Oh, it's anything from 5 to 500
right,
employees.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
that's a big difference. But but let's just say small business. What should they be thinking about when it comes to mobile apps, and what should their strategy be, whether it be for the next 3 months or 3 years?
Well, the That's a great question, and I'll address it first from brand awareness perspective. So what we would traditionally call a business to customer, business to consumer approach. Each brand has to understand the demographics of their user base and how to leverage that that technology in order to achieve that. Now, if I'm a $500 million producer of cement, I'm not sure that a consumer app is going to do me a lot of good, candidly, right? I mean, it'd be nice to have something to measure, I guess, my driveway that I want replacing, but that's sort of a one-time use, and so they're not going to be a good investment there. But if I have direct interaction and the end customer is the consumer, then by all means, some brand presence is absolutely necessary. If you don't have a MDOT website, meaning that you've got your traditional website and you've modified it to be presentable on a mobile device. So typically, if I do an m.nuco.com, it's going to take me to the mobile version of the website as opposed to the traditional website. If you don't have one of those, you need to get one of those, and then target, and that's relatively inexpensive to achieve, and then target what specific functionality needs to be spent in order to really drive ROI out of that. Because to your point, a bad mobile app, and by the way, people overwhelmingly prefer apps to browser apps or web apps. You've got to target that app, and it may just be brand awareness, it may be loyalty, something relatively simple that gets you a map on their phone or their device. On the B2B side, there's a lot of, as I mentioned earlier, the low-hanging fruit, and companies of all sizes could take advantage of prepackaged mobile apps that integrate with back-office solutions. So for a lot less spend and a lot less what we'd call sort of the creative branding side, they can leverage elements such as the purchase order app. So there, we'll see more and more out-of-the-box applications, if you will, that connect to traditional back-office systems where organizations can gain the benefit of that and increase their efficiencies or their reduce cost for far less out of cash or out of pocket money. So those are typically available as software as a service, right? They can subscribe to them at will. So you can, in fact, we've published apps like that that do exactly that. You can pay a fee per user per month for the PO approval app, for example.
Well, let's just kind of touch on the ROI of this. I mean, I don't know if you have numbers off the top of your head or not, but you know, what if you are successful in implementing an app, whether it be a B2B or B2C or whatever, maybe let's look at the B2B side. I mean, you know, are we seeing things like an increase in employee productivity, boost in revenues, or increased profit margins? I mean, maybe give us some ROI, at least idea of what a company should expect.
Yeah, and it's going to vary by industry. But I'll tell you a couple of little interesting factoids that relate to the use of the mobile devices, as well as some numbers on those. But we were told by a major retailer that mobile users, as opposed to traditional web users, are 7 times more likely to make a purchase. So they're using their mobile device, they're 7 times more likely to make the purchase. They're 30 times more likely to make the purchase the same day. So it really drives behavior. And then how does it impact that? So some statistics that have come through the work that we've done and others is employee productivity can be up by 44%. You think about the capability of walking down that hallway, approving those POs while I'm walking anyway, right? Meaning I don't have to do it. So huge increase there. And of course, that should free them up to do some sort of other activity, whether it's selling, customer relations, management. Heard numbers of on the revenue side, I mentioned the brick and mortar correlation, but increase in revenue by 1.5 times. And then the ability to really, because of the low-cost delivery associated with some of this, really deliver 3 times or 3x profits.
So those are some pretty good numbers coming back. I mean, that's a reasonable investment if you expect those types of returns.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that drive that? I mean, so like employee productivity, one of the things that comes to mind for me is, like you said, ease of access and speed of access. I mean, it's kind of clunky to get your laptop out, have to boot it up, have to get into some stuff, versus just being able to pull things up on your phone, you know, but I mean, what do you see? What are some of the keys that make some of these numbers really tick?
Well, for one thing, you know, one of the key drivers is timeliness of information. So we talked about, you talked earlier about CRM, right? And, you know, every salesperson who uses CRM, you know, what do they allocate Friday to? You know, updating their CRM in time for the Monday morning phone call, or Monday for Friday, whatever it is. And you think about the time invested in that and how really, in my experience, very few people like that exercise. So if I had the capability to do that in my car seconds after leaving the appointment and be done with it and do it in a user interface that really employs, in my case, right-handed, use my thumb to do check boxes and cut and copy, you know, or paste text or my standard responses, or I can do voice interaction with it, I'm much more likely to do that. And then that should give me time on Friday to make, you know, additional sales calls. In terms of other efficiencies, what we see is, particularly in supply chain, is simply better access to information. We were helping a manufacturer who the traditional method is they're use Kanban, system of manufacturing. So the line and the status of the manufacturing facility is always real-time and always critical. And the old process was the vendors who were supplying, if they had a QA defect to report, they would hand it to an employee of the company, and the employee would then go to a terminal and enter this in. And we came up with the idea, well, why not just let them do that directly on their own device and enter in that defect? And the results were pretty amazing, because now we have vendors reporting their own QA defect. The impact is known immediately. Action can be taken swiftly and promptly to make any corrections necessary, as opposed to a delay that may have been upwards of 8 hours. And is 8 hours critical? Well, today it's critical, right? When you're manufacturing the items, these companies were manufacturing or is manufacturing, which is in excess of a $2 million spend per item. Yeah, very critical.
Now, how difficult is it to put an app out there that will work across all platforms? I mean, I think of, like, you know, when I think apps, I mean, one thing that comes to mind obviously is like little games, right? And the number one complaint I see on the feedback of these little games is, you know, can't get past level whatever because I have a such and such phone. I have a Droid, right. I have an HTC, I have a Samsung, et cetera.
Yeah.
How do you kind of head that off at the gap so that you're putting something out there that's friendly across all these platforms?
That's a great question, and it's one of those battles that people always feel real passionate about, right? I mean, take us back to the Oracle DB2 or whatever, you know, whatever model you want to talk about. Users have overwhelmingly voted that their preference is a rich native app, or at least the experience of a rich native app. And so when I say rich native app, what I mean is an app that, in the case of the iPhone, is written in Objective-C using the models and toolkits that were expressly built for the iPhone and the iPad to deliver an outstanding application. That and Android, Google, you know, has similar, and of course Windows is now coming out with a similar technology. That produces, in the best apps, the best user experience. In bad apps, it's bad. But if you compare the best, what I would call a web experience, right, sort of something that's been homogenized to run on multiple platforms, against the best app that takes advantage of all the native capabilities, the best native app wins. So the technology that people are employing, you have your native for each of the platforms, rich native. Then there's the advent of HTML5. So people will talk to you about, hey, you can write this once and run it across multiple platforms. And that's typically using either HTML5 or what we call a hybrid, which is a little bit of native and a little bit of web. The experience there can be satisfactory if I call what I call a captive audience, if I get to tell somebody what app they're going to use, that may be a satisfactory experience. I mean, something that's not overly complicated. I'm not really worried overly about the customer engagement. That can produce a somewhat satisfactory response. But if I'm looking to drive ROI, right, which is probably what I'm looking to do, B2B or B2C, the right answer is going with a rich native app.
So, again, I'm a business owner, and I'm thinking maybe it's time to invest in mobile. I need to start looking into some of this, you know, some of the mobile app technology and seeing what's right for me. As that gains in popularity, one thing we know is there's going to be a lot of people that are going to crop up with the Me Too. We also do that, all right? And they're not going to be good people to engage. They're not going to have the knowledge or the capability to deliver. And it's going to cause confusion in the marketplace. How do people distinguish? How do they know this is a company that I should be working with on the development of my app?
Yeah. Oh, great question, and you're right, because to your point, like I stated earlier, you know, there was a customer who dropped the brand because the app crashed, right? And that it may have been a good app in all instances, but the quality assurance aspect. So our I'll talk about our frame of reference, and people can apply that to other engagements or other companies. We think holistically about the mobile experience. That means that we start all the way back from ideation or ID action, one of our terms, turning that into a deliverable. We think about the strategy, and we think about long-term. We don't think about just this one tactical, one-off app that needs to be done. I was talking with a prospect the other day, and they said, yeah, you know, we've created 66 apps, and not more than one of them has something in the neighborhood of, I think it was 25,000 downloads. Now, this is a huge brand recognized everywhere, and they've not been able to, you know, do something successful by their measure in that. So thinking about strategy, being holistic in the approach, thinking about the enterprise, and then thinking about every stage of activity that it takes to get an app out the door. We're currently working with a customer, and they've not published anything in an app store before, so we're helping them through that process of doing that for their B2C apps. But understanding the infrastructure of the company, those different disciplines, and remembering that QA is critical, design is critical, architecture. And if it's approached from, we can hurry up and build an app and get something out in 15 days, versus let's look at how you're going to, you know, really leverage your existing assets. Let's look about the message you really want to deliver. And think about it as an enterprise-grade solution. If you're not thinking about it as an enterprise-grade solution, then you're probably at risk. If you find someone who takes the enterprise approach, you're better off.
Well, that sounds like great advice and makes a tremendous amount of sense.
Yeah. Well, we've done all this before, haven't we? You know, and through our careers, we've done it over and over, and we did it with web, right? We did it with client server, and there's no reason to reinvent the wheel here.
Well, we still see that even with things like web where, you know, it's, hey, I can get your page up in a day. You may get the page up in a day, and that's fine if you're looking for a placeholder, but if you're looking for something that people are going to interact off of, it's different. Of course, you got to weigh the other side of the coin, too. There are people who will tell you, hey, we're going to take 6 months and help you really figure this thing out.
Right.
Truth is, you probably need a much simpler website for what you're doing. So it's really about just getting somebody to understand what your needs are, and then help you develop a plan and a solution.
Absolutely, and you know, when you said the web, you made me think about something. So what are the analytics that you're capturing when that user on that mobile user is using the device, and then how are you going to use that to, you know, make a better product for them? How are you going to use that to drive their behavior? It's interesting. Scott Snyder on our team is working on this new area of behavioral change and predictive and non-predictive behavior. So you think about the apps that are out there. We have some apps that want us to eat more, and we have some apps that want us to lose weight, right? And it goes on and on, right, about the different types of apps. And how do you incorporate that kind of thought process into your application design? Now, that's not a lot of companies that are out there doing that. In fact, I'm not aware of any other company that's bringing that to the table right now. So bringing that kind of thought leadership and vision as a capability for our organization is unique, because if you're not there, your competition will be there, and you will need to be there. And you'll either be leading or following. In the mobile space, you really want to be leading.
Fair enough. Well, if I want to lead my company and I want to reach out and get Mobiquity to give me some help, how do I get in touch with you guys and learn more about what you can do for me?
Well, I appreciate that. We're at MobiquityInc.com. And I'll attempt to spell it correctly here. So it's MobiquityInc.com. And of course, your listeners are free to give me a call directly at 404-550-1109.
Well, that's great information, Dan. Appreciate you coming back, and we probably ought to plan to do this again in maybe another couple months, because the way mobile is changing right now, I'm sure we'll have a whole new slate of things to talk about by then.
I'm sure we will. I'd enjoy it.
All right. Well, for those of you listening, I hope that you've reevaluated your perspective on mobile apps and made a decision about whether or not getting into that space is something that's right for your business. Customer engagement is going to be very important in the future, so I hope you're taking some notes out there. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. This has been Renegade Radio, brought to you by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. Tune in each and every week as we continue to explore how you can get ahead by getting out of traditional norms. Remember, opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.